Hello and welcome to the Trial Talk podcast. I'm your host, Berta Tarre Torres, a former researcher and a science communications officer at the Emergency Clinical Trials Unit at UCL. In this show, we explore the clinical trial landscape by talking to the clinicians, researchers, and patients that are behind the work we do. If you're interested in learning how our research can help improve healthcare in the UK and around the world, this is the podcast for you. This year is a special one for the unit, as we are celebrating our 25th anniversary. That's 25 years of smarter studies, global impact, and better health. Optimization immunotherapy clinical trials investigate different ways to reduce the intensity of immunotherapy. These trials can be challenging to run, because patients might be concerned about the impact that reducing their treatment could have on the cancer. In this episode, we will explore how patients feel about taking part in optimization immunotherapy trials. We will discuss the main barriers that patients face, and we will share some recommendations to address them. To find out more, I'm talking to Sophie Merrick, one of our clinical fellows.
My name's Sophie Merrick, and I am a clinical fellow at the MRC CTU at UCL and a medical oncology registrar in London.
Patients' views are crucial to understanding the barriers to participating in clinical trials. To understand how immunotherapy optimization trials are perceived by patients, you run the OPTIC study. So, Sophie, could you tell us more about what was the idea behind OPTIC?
To kind of give you a bit of background, there are a lot of clinical trials which are going on globally, which are looking at this question of optimising immune checkpoint inhibition, which is basically immunotherapy. So the OPTIC comes from OPT and then immune checkpoint inhibition. But what we found is that actually there's very little data on what patients think about, you know, these different approaches to optimising the way that we give immunotherapy treatments, which is really important because, firstly, we need to design trials which are acceptable to patients. Secondly, it's important to actually recruit patients to those trials. And then thirdly, if we're going to implement the findings of those trials in future, we need to make sure that those results are meaningful to patients and having meaningful change. So that was why I set up the OPTIC study to look specifically at patient views of these approaches.
And who were the participants involved in OPTIC?
With the OPTIC study, we focused on patients who had advanced cancers, which means cancers which have spread to other parts of the body, because that's where we're using a lot of these immunotherapy drugs. And we focused on two cancer types, so melanoma, which is a type of skin cancer, and kidney cancer. And we picked those because immunotherapy drugs are very commonly used in those cancer types. And we are also running a trial called REFINE, which is looking at giving immunotherapy in different ways in those specific cancer types. So that's why we focused on those.
We have an episode talking about REFINE in a lot of detail, but could you explain briefly what is the study looking at?
Yeah, so REFINE and REFINE Lung, actually, which is being run at Imperial, they're kind of being run in parallel, are looking at giving treatment less often. So that's one approach of the way that we could optimise the way we give immunotherapy. But there are also trials in the UK and internationally looking at stopping treatment earlier because we don't know how long we need to give treatment for. And there are also some trials looking at giving lower doses of immunotherapy as well. So one in the Netherlands, for example, looking at giving lower doses.
So the OPTIC study is sort of complementary to the REFINE trial in the sense that it's looking at the same types of cancers.
Yeah, the idea that is that it would be complementary, but also hopefully inform other trials internationally on things like design or recommendations from patients about how they'd communicate trials, about important things when you're designing the trials which matter to patients. So helpful for REFINE, but we're hoping that it would be broader than that and helpful for other trials as well.
So the OPTIC study then only assessed issues related to the frequency of immunotherapy treatment, like in REFINE, or did it also include views on reducing the dose and stopping treatment earlier?
No, it was looking at all of these three ways. So it was looking at what patients thought of receiving a lower dose, receiving something less often, or stopping early, and also kind of other more novel approaches, I suppose, things like personalising their treatment schedule. For example, one of the things that we talk to patients about is we can use something called therapeutic drug monitoring, and that's where we would check the levels of immunotherapy in the bloodstream. And only at the point where they started dropping to a certain level will we give the next dose. So rather than giving everybody, you know, we're going to give you this, you know, half as often, we would personalise their treatment schedule to them. So it was also about informing future trials. And that was something patients really liked.
And once you had recruited the participants, how did you run the study? Were the discussions online or in person? Did you face any practical issues?
So again, we wanted to make this as accessible as possible to a wide range of people. So we did a mixture. So we ran some focus groups online, which was great because it did allow us to get a really wide geographical variation. So we had people from all over the UK. It also allowed us to include people perhaps who were working and it was more challenging to come and visit, and also people who had children, you know, or caring for people. But we also wanted to make sure that we ran the in-person groups to make sure they were accessible to people who were less familiar with using the kind of online technology. So we did that as well.
And what was the total amount of participants?
So we had 31 participants in the end, which we selected from sort of a larger pool of applicants. And across that, we had a really good range in terms of all of those different kind of characteristics that I mentioned.
So moving on to the results bit, what did you find from these discussions with the 31 participants? What were the main results from OPTIC?
We kind of looked at this study and we categorised things into three broad themes. So themes are things that kind of we see consistently through the information that we're getting from patients. And the first one of those was actually that treatments and clinic visits provide reassurance to patients. So a lot of the trials we've been thinking about kind of decrease the amount and number of visits with the aim to improve quality of life. But a lot of patients actually found that kind of clinic visit reassuring. So that was for a number of reasons. Firstly, because it was a chance to connect with their team and get feedback and make sure they were being assessed. But secondly, because it was a chance to connect with other patients. And interestingly, this was actually particularly the case during the COVID pandemic when there was a reduction in in-person support services. So it was a chance to connect with other patients. And so one of the kind of recommendations from that, from patients, was that if we're going to reduce the amount that we're giving treatment, that shouldn't reduce our engagement with patients. So for example, if you are stopping treatment early in a trial, then it's about still having that kind of input and that support for patients, because that can be a really difficult time when patients feel that they have their kind of safety net taken away, and perhaps even offering some kind of psychological support at that time when they're stopping treatment. Another one of the recommendations was that depending on the clinical trial design, how much clinical review they were getting would impact their views on whether or not they took part. So they didn't just want it to be a reduction in engagement with their clinical team just because they weren't necessarily having their treatment. Secondly, we looked at what influenced people's willingness to kind of consider taking part in a trial looking at optimising immunotherapy. So we found that patients made this kind of personal assessment of risk versus benefit. And we looked at a number of factors which might or might not influence decision making. And things which did influence decision making was response to treatment. So patients who'd had a complete response, which is basically where you've had your treatment and we can see no disease on the scan, much more comfortable with stopping or reducing their treatment than somebody who had control of the cancer, but it was still there. Patients who had had side effects from treatment, much more motivated to take part, whereas those who didn't have side effects kind of thought, you know, one patient said, if it's not broke, don't fix it, you know, so less motivated to take part. We found that patients who had a long travel time to receive their treatment, definitely that influenced decisions, and not just to a long travel time, but also, for example, one of the participants had brain metastases, which means that you aren't allowed to drive. So trying to get public transport for 2 hours there, 2 hours back regularly had quite an impact. And then employment status. So people who were trying to continue working, which typically people do with these kind of treatments, that impacted people's ability to do that. So that influenced views as well. Interestingly, age didn't really impact the views in our study, and neither did gender, neither did people who had children or didn't have children. And then the other thing that we found, which I guess was unsurprising, was that people have this pre-existing belief about how treatment and trials work. So particularly this belief that if you get more treatment, that's better. And that's kind of typically the way that we've run oncology trials in the past. You know, we've tried to give as high doses as possible that patients can tolerate. But actually, immunotherapy works in a very different way. And so we need to kind of challenge that mantra of more is better. But I think that's quite an education piece, because patients and participants in this study said they really understood chemo and they understood how that worked. But the immunotherapy was quite a different thing to understand. So it's kind of trying to get your head around why that would be different. And they thought it was really crucial to have a kind of patient-friendly explanation of why we were doing the study. You know, the scientific rationale didn't need to be covering all the data, but they needed to understand why they were taking part in this trial and why we thought that it would be just as effective. I mentioned earlier that they also felt that treatment should be personalised, so we talked about that. And also, there was quite a conception among the participants that trials were a last resort. So, you know, we should offer trials to patients at all different stages of their treatment. But I think what a lot of them had as a preconceived idea was that trials are for when everything else has failed. And they're a kind of last chance saloon, one participant puts it, which so being approached about a trial can be quite anxiety provoking. So it's also a bit of education and reassurance, you know, being approached about a trial, that this doesn't mean there's no other treatment options left.
Apart from exploring the views on these three main themes, you also investigated the best ways to communicate about these trials. What were your findings on this part?
Firstly, we looked at the language to describe optimization, which we've used in this case, which was the patient's preferred language. So that's why we're using that. But we looked at other terminology, which classically we've used in oncology to describe giving less treatment. So, for example, de-escalation was the term that we always used to use, and patients overwhelmingly really disliked that. Nobody liked it. And they really disliked things like reduced intensity or minimum effective dose. So we looked at those kind of terms, and patients really disliked that. They liked the term optimization, and they also liked personalization, but obviously only if the trial had a truly sort of personalized design. So terminology was one kind of important thing. Then we looked at what we should be communicating to patients. And I've mentioned some of this as we've gone along, but sort of including a participant-friendly way of explaining the scientific rationale was really important to challenge this mantra that more is better. Because otherwise, you know, patients want to do what's best for them. And ultimately, they want to, you know, control of their cancer is one of their highest priorities, obviously. So it's explaining why we're doing this, that we think that cancer control would be, you know, we have a rationale why we're doing that, and that would be the same. And that's particularly important for patients maybe who are receiving other types of anti-cancer therapy. So, for example, in our group, we had patients with kidney cancer, and they often receive a tablet-based treatment called tyrosine kinase inhibitors at some point during their treatment. And that treatment, dose and effect are directly correlated. So it's quite hard for them to pick apart why that anti-cancer treatment is different from immunotherapy. So perhaps giving comparisons of immunotherapy to those common drugs. And then one of the really important things was when the trial should be discussed. And we were quite interested in talking to patients about this, because everybody is sort of using different approaches. But as I mentioned, people Some patients found the idea of being approached early quite overwhelming, but actually probably the majority found being approached late quite unsettling because they got into their head how their treatment would be given and for how long. Thinking about one patient in particular who took part, you know, he was mentioning that he had all of his treatments sort of marked out on his calendar and knew exactly how many he would be getting. So being told that that's all going to change could be quite unsettling. And another participant, you know, saying that actually she would find it quite positive to be thinking, okay, if I have a good response to my immunotherapy in a couple of months, then I might be offered something where I don't have to have it as often. So kind of psychologically beneficial as well. So obviously when the trial should be discussed would need to be adapted to each person, you know, in the clinic. But I think it's about giving options to bring in the information earlier and then, you know, being guided by the patient, really. So another thing that we talked about is who should communicate the trial. So sometimes trials might be introduced by your consultant oncologist, sometimes by another oncologist, sometimes by a research nurse. But everyone who took part in the study felt that it should be their oncologist who they have an established relationship with. These trials are not necessarily as easy to understand as a typical trial where you're just being given a new drug versus an old drug, and they take a while to get your head around. So that should be with someone that they had that relationship with. And a lot of people said if it wasn't, they'd be less inclined to take part in the trial because there wouldn't be that kind of trust there. And then the final thing we looked at is how the trial should be communicated. So lots of patients felt that actually using this huge patient information sheet, you know, that we do have to give to people who are interested in taking part in trials is a bit overwhelming. And actually using different resources and having different things available for different people, things like videos and podcasts, would be helpful.
All this information that you gathered from participants is very valuable. Now, how are you taking it forward? How are you using this knowledge to improve how patients see these trials?
So as a result of this study, we've made a number of recommendations to influence the design of future trials, but also to promote recruitment to trials which are ongoing. So, for example, one of the trial design recommendations that we've made is that when we are writing our trial protocols, our eligibility criteria needs to include these patients who've had a lot of side effects, because those are the very patients who are most motivated to kind of participate in these trials. We've also suggested that when patients aren't having treatment and they're having, you know, we're spacing out the treatment, we need to make sure we're building in those monitoring visits and explaining that to patients when they're considering taking part in the trial. And we also need to think about patients who are stopping treatment in particular, building in additional psychological support for those people. We've also made a list of recommendations in terms of how to communicate these trials, sort of when, how, what and who, you know, those kind of communication recommendations.
And what considerations should we take into account when applying these recommendations to other optimization immunotherapy trials? In other words, what were the limitations of the OPTIC study?
So I think the main limitation of this study was that it was a UK-based study. And obviously in the UK, we have a publicly funded healthcare system. So patients aren't paying for these treatments out of pocket. They might have costs associated with treatment, which a lot of people pointed out, like travelling to and from to receive their treatment, missed time off work. But the actual cost of the drug itself and the treatment, you know, is not something that they bear. Whereas in a lot of countries, patients are paying directly for these drugs. And similar research has been done looking at giving less chemotherapy for breast cancer, for example. And that was done in the US. And one of the main factors was to reduce the financial burden of treatment. That was one of the main motivators. And we know that financial impacts of treatment can actually have a really devastating impact on quality of life. So perhaps, you know, if we'd done this in a more global population, that would have been another more important factor.
So following up on that, are there any other studies in other parts of the world that complement your findings?
The main work looking at patient perspectives in this is in breast cancer, looking at giving less chemotherapy. The breast cancer world have kind of paved the way in terms of looking at how we can give treatment more effectively to reduce side effects for patients. And a lot of the findings of that work, which was published in the US, was very similar. So, you know, patients' primary driver for this kind of thing was to reduce side effects. Patients' primary concern was about the reduced impact on the cancer. And they found similar things in terms of communication recommendations, as we found in this study. More recently, there was a trial called the Dante trial, which was looking at stopping immunotherapy early in melanoma. That was a UK-based trial, and disappointingly, that closed due to poor recruitment. But within that trial, they did interviews with patients who had either taken part or declined to take part. And again, they found similar kind of findings to what we found in the OPTIC study, and that those results should be published, I think, hopefully soon.
That's exciting to hear and also reassuring. Now, on a more personal level, how do you think these results will change the way we run and communicate about these trials?
I think with all of these trials that are either being run or being designed at the moment, we need to start with answers and improvements that are important to patients. You know, not just us as clinicians or researchers deciding that this is an interesting scientific question, but, you know, if we're going to improve quality of life for patients, then we need to understand what's going to improve their quality of life and what's going to impact that. And I think what will be really interesting is these drugs are actually moving now into earlier disease stage settings, so what we call the adjuvant setting. So that's when you give a treatment after surgery to prevent it coming back. We're also giving it in the neoadjuvant setting, which is before surgery. And so those patients we're trying to cure of their cancer as opposed to trying to control the cancer. And actually optimising the way that we give those drugs is going to become increasingly important. So I think that, you know, hopefully more work could be done looking at how we can optimise drugs in that setting, which is different to what we ran in this study.
So you mentioned the importance of improving the quality of life of patients. This is about understanding how treatments affect people's day-to-day life. Are you doing any work to capture what is important to patients in terms of their quality of life and how to improve it in these trials?
We're actually in the process of setting up a study at the moment looking at the impact of receiving these immunotherapy drugs given in that earlier disease stage setting on patients and the impact on quality of life. Because what influences one person's quality of life doesn't necessarily, you know, influence another person's quality of life. And it's quite a subjective measurement. So I think it's important to look at. And the difference with giving these drugs in the earlier disease stage setting is we now are increasingly recognising that the side effects from these treatments can become chronic in up to 40% of patients. And in many cases, they can be permanent. So having potentially been cured of cancer and being given a treatment and resulting in that long-term kind of side effect is quite a different question and quite a different impact on quality of life than perhaps somebody whose cancer has spread to other parts of the body and this is what's keeping them alive. And this is the only treatment that, you know, is really going to be working at this time. So we're doing some work looking at quality of life in that setting.
If you want to find out more about OPTIC and its findings, the results are now published. You can read the paper by clicking the link in the description. For more information, you can also visit our OPTIC webpage at the mrcctu.ucl.ac.uk. Is there anything else you want to share with us today, Sophie?
Just before I go, I'd like to say a couple of thank yous. So a big thank you to Cancer Research UK, who funded me and funded this study. Thank you to all of the charities and organisations and patients who fed into the design of the study, and in particular the team at Melanoma Focus and Action Kidney Cancer. And finally, to all the participants who took part in the study.
And that is the end of today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. If you want to learn more about REFINE, our optimization immunotherapy trial, we did an episode with Sophie last year about it. You will find the link in the description. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter at MRCCTU and on LinkedIn at MRC Clinical Trials Unit at UCL for all the latest updates. See you in the next episode of the Trial Talk.